Hi, this is James Mercer from The Shins.
This is Shirley Manson.
This is Lil Tullis, co-founder of The Cure.
This is Huey Lewis giving you the story behind the song.
The Story Behind the Song is back with an exciting second season. We peel back the layers on music's most iconic hits with legendary artists like The Killers, Heart, The B-52s, Violent Femmes, Jewel, Huey Lewis, Modern English, and more. To keep the music flowing, we'll be sprinkling in classic episodes from our archives between each new one. So check out The Story Behind the Song wherever you get your podcast.
Hey, I'm Nancy Wilson.
Mike Campbell.
Mark Mother's Bathroom Devo.
Hey, it's Adam from County Crows, and I am here giving you the story behind the song.
The Story Behind the Song is back for season four. I'm Peter Chotti of Deep Cuts Media, and this season we're diving even deeper into some of music history's most iconic tracks with the legends who made them.
What's so beautiful about it is a lot of people connect with, you gotta live your life and don't let the big man push you down. Don't have to live like a refugee, can't keep fighting for what you believe. And that was Tom.
From the spark of inspiration to untold tales from the studio, we unlock the true stories that shape the music you love.
At the time on the radio, there was a really cool riff by Nazareth covering a Joni Mitchell song, This Flight Tonight. It had the same groove, but I think Barracuda kind of blew it out of the water.
Join us as we all sit down with music icons like Devo, Heart, Mike Campbell of Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, Sublime, Counting Crows, and so many more. New episodes are out now from the Consequence Podcast Network, so tune in wherever you get your podcast and join me for the story behind the song.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Hey, it's Dr. Mike. We hope you have been enjoying our conversation with Zach from Pup. We are taking a week off, but to keep the conversation going, we thought we'd share an episode from The Vault with musician and mental health advocate Sarah Barthol of Fantagram, who joins me to share her struggle with devastating and traumatic loss in her life. We'll see you next week with a brand new episode. Welcome to Going There, the crossroads where music and mental health meet. Today we are talking with singer-songwriter and multi-instrumentalist Sarah Barthol. Now many of you know Sarah as part of the music duo Fantagram with Josh Carter with songs such as Same Old Blues, You Don't Get Me High Anymore, and my personal favorite, When I'm Small. Fantagram has been described as lush, sumptuous, sultry, evocative, masters of tension, lyrics full of barbed, abstract images. And Fantagram just teamed up with Tom Morello of Rage Against the Machine on a song called Driving to Texas. So check out that song and their recent album Ceremony at Fantagram.com. Now on the Going There podcast, we have the tough conversations to address important issues so we can learn from each other, challenge the stigma of mental illness, and get the care we need. And one of the things that Sarah talks about is her experience of devastating and traumatic loss in her life. Sarah has been a fantastic mental health advocate over the years and has been very forthcoming and outspoken about how she lost her sister when her sister committed suicide. But prior to that tragic event, Sarah had also lost her father to cancer, and her mother struggled with cancer for years, as did some of her friends. And so what Sarah describes is years of these devastating losses, as well as others, one on top of another. This type of repetitive loss can be devastating and traumatic, where we're still reeling from one loss as we're trying to make sense of the next one. It can be overwhelming and horrible, not only because of losing people close to us, but also because it undermines our fundamental belief that we live in a safe and predictable world. And our sense that we are safe and that we have some level of control over our lives is critical to our own mental health and well-being. And one of the things that Sarah talks about doing in the face of this loss is being what she calls a superhero, who needs to be the one who says everything is okay and tries to make everything okay. That is what many of us instinctively do when we face loss or experience others around us struggling. We try to be strong for others so we can be there for them when they are facing sickness, despair, or even possibly death. The problem is that we often close off our own emotional processing, avoiding or suppressing the intense feelings that come from facing the suffering of others or our own suffering. And this is when so many of us turn to music as a way of understanding, processing, and expressing our feelings in the face of devastating and traumatic situations like the losses that Sarah has endured. And in fact, Sarah talked about how making music gave her the opportunity and freedom to experience and express her feelings. Now, as we progress through this season of Going There, our goal is to bring you, the audience, further into the conversation. On the Consequence website, and wherever you may find these episodes, you'll also find a short questionnaire. We'd love to hear your feedback, questions you have that have been sparked by our conversations with these incredible artists, and topics you'd love to see addressed. We incorporate these responses into episodes, as well as a monthly column called Ask Dr. Mike on the Consequence website. If you enjoy the show, please leave us a review wherever you get your podcasts. These help other folks find their way into the conversation so they can go there with us. So let's go there and listen to what Sarah has to say. Hey, Sarah, welcome to Going There.
Hi, how's it going?
It's going okay. Thanks so much for being on the show.
Thank you for having me.
So you and I talked initially before the podcast about what I'm hearing is just a tremendous amount of loss and stress that you faced regarding different things that have been happening with members of your family. And one of the things that you've been very outspoken about was your struggle with the fact that your sister unfortunately committed suicide. I'm sorry for that loss. And so I thought that maybe we should start there and then talk about, you know, that as a beginning point of just kind of how you've dealt with these stressors and losses throughout your life.
Yeah. It's been about 5 years since my sister passed. And it's been a pretty important 5 years for myself. I mean, a really, really hard amount of time to kind of learn and grow about where I've come from, why I do the things I do, maybe why my sister thought the way she thought and, you know, self-medicated and whatever, you know, kind of struggles that she had that she'll never be able to tell the story. I've been kind of just diving in and kind of opening up just different parts of my life that I never really had focused on before, because I've had a pretty traumatizing, just like a life full of death, a life, like, I guess, life full of just loss. And it's just kind of, it started when I was a kid. So I think I realized a lot while before coming on here is I kind of want to just tell my story and maybe tell my story, my sister's story of our childhood and how things, what happened, I guess, and kind of where my music came in. And where, you know, I started to depend more and more and more on my music, and just kind of where I am now. And just, I don't know, a lot of self-realization things that really do tie in to my sister and just being honest about mental health, which is what I'm wanting
to talk about. A life of death. I mean, that is such a powerful phrase. And, you know, maybe we can start there just in terms of just that concept that one would identify their life so closely with death in and of itself is such a powerful statement.
Yeah, it is. It's a strange way of seeing it and looking at my past. But I've got a lot of stuff. I want to start with talking about, I think, just my sister and me growing up, and, you know, where we came from. We came from middle of nowhere, upstate New York, in this small town called Greenwich, New York, not pronounced Greenwich. It's Greenwich. They're very strict on that there, but really small town. Grew up on a farm, on like 10 acres, had pigs and dogs and lots of chickens and a huge, huge garden that we would sell our produce on the side of our road, like super just a really cool way to grow up. Spent a lot of time in the woods, you know, picking blueberries and things like that. But very quaint and lovely. And so it was me and my sister and my father and my mom and my dad. When I was 15, we got a call that he had a seizure while he was driving and was in the hospital. And at the time, he wasn't living with us. My mom was, I think, officially divorced to him. And we hadn't seen him in a while, just because things were a little rough at home. But we found out then that he had brain cancer, and he had a brain tumor that was growing in his frontal lobe, which is like your personality, your functionality, your judgment, everything. It was the size of a grapefruit when they found it. And it was growing for ever so slowly for 12 years. It was so slowly and gradual that it totally, can I swear?
100%.
Okay. I swear a lot, but I won't, sorry. It completely just turned him into a complete fucking asshole, and he lost all of his ability to work. Like he was like, and the best way possible, because I wish I really fucking got to know him. He reminded me a lot of myself. I have just a lust for life. I get enjoyment out of everything. He was a extremely like successful ski photographer at the time. He published books. He's, you know, made films. He was a pretty epic dude, as my mom would always kind of explain. But it grew so fucking slowly that no one knew that there was really anything. So ever so slowly, he became abusive, emotionally abusive. I think he was more physical abusive to my sister. My sister was, like her personalities, they just kind of clashed, and the state that my father was in, I believe, not that there's any excuse, but kind of is a pretty big excuse. Like his state was, lash back and just, I don't know, just be awful to everything and anyone. And, I think I developed this kind of keeping any of my feelings inside, just because I wanted to be the, like, okay, you know, let's allow all this crap to happen, and I need to be the one who isn't going to start problems, because my sister was not the easiest kid. She was born with anxiety. I think she had her first panic attack. My mom always tells me she had her first panic attack when she was like two. She just like, she wouldn't get her way or something, and she would just start hyperventilating and breathe, and then she would just turn blue and pass out, kind of thing. And she was born with a cleft lip as well, which was, I think, pretty tough. As only my perspective, I don't know what that would feel like, but it was a lot for her to have to go through in school and whatnot, you know, what society kind of makes females feel like they have to be and whatnot. And see, these are the tangents I'm talking about, but it's okay. So we found out that my dad had a tumor, and then he had about, I think he lived about two more years. So he passed away, when I was 17, and, That was a pretty crazy experience. Not even knowing that it was anything crazy, because it was, I kind of caught a part of my life in a strange way, and kind of realizing in strange ways that I never really knew my dad. I didn't really have a father figure, I guess. I didn't really have, I don't know, that like security, apparently these are all things I'm learning now, but security and safety, what a father should, you know, bring and give to you and teach you all of these things. I feel like was pretty much lost in general, because there was just a lot of chaos in the house, and trying to be strong for my mom, and wanted her to be okay, wanted to protect her from my dad and from my sister, because she was an asshole to us. Sorry, Becky. I call her an asshole a lot, actually. I hope she can hear me. But she was, and she was a real asshole to me. And I kind of just kept everything bottled up inside, and not even knowing that I had feelings. I never even know. This is the stuff I've been learning through therapy for the past 5 years, is I had no idea how I could actually say something and somebody could help me. So I went through a handful of just really shitty boyfriends, abusive relationships, kind of gravitating towards, I think, people that, I felt like maybe I could help, because I wasn't able to help my dad. And I think just thinking that it was normal for me to be treated like shit, because of my sister too. I think I developed this thing where I was like, it's okay, they don't mean it, mentality. So I had a lot of shitty relationships. That's where I think in a space where I met up with Josh, my bandmate again, and we started the band, and I truly felt my passion and just, I think what music was doing for me, it was bringing this kind of, it was like this cathartic release, but me not even really understanding when I look back at all of the songs that you just, even if you look at the list of names of all of our songs, you know, like they're pretty dark and they're pretty, I mean, and the songs are dark. All of the lyrics are dark. I remember back then kind of realizing just in a way of, like, I don't know. That's just kind of in interviews. I don't know. We just kind of gravitate towards that. It's more interesting, you know, to me, but not really even knowing, kind of where it started, where it came from. But it was a true release for me that I had, like, I was able to speak in a way. And it took over my life, and we dove into being in a band, and we hit the ground running. It was like this kind of moment where we're just like, all right, let's do it. Let's go. We believe in our music. We loved it. I think it was our release to the world, to not even understanding the past, but it was a way to tell my story without having to tell my story, and connecting to people and connecting to our fans that could hear what I was trying to say. So then that kind of started. My mom gets cancer, gastrointestinal stromal tumor, to be precise, which is when she had it. She didn't, if she had it maybe a couple, 2 years before, she would have died. So that was pretty terrifying for me, but also like kind of got used to this. I'm going to take care of everyone. And my sister is at the moment, fully struggling and not being able to cope because she had always self-medicated. She never got the right help. Not that we even knew what right or wrong help was at the time, but you know, as I struggle and have struggled in the past, it's really easy to pick up a drink and numb yourself, instead of deal with the problem. So, she got cancer and almost died. Then she's been good for the past, I think, 8 years or so, but it was pretty awful at the beginning. Another one of my friends got cancer. He was like 28. He got colon cancer. My Josh and I's very good friend, Kirk. And my ex-boyfriend, Benjamin Curtis, he was in the Secret Machines and School of Seven Bells, got cancer, I think maybe the following year. And he was in his early 30s as well, 34 or so. So there was a lot of just realizing, I think, just kind of white knuckling it, just being like, holy, like, not even realizing how much around I looked around, of just being like, wow, this shit is, I don't know if this is normal. But I just kept kind of going, you know, using the music to, you know, just kind of release my feelings as well as I could. And Benjamin, Kirk ends up dying. Benjamin ends up dying very soon after. I think Benjamin, was diagnosed, and then he passed away like 8 months or something after he was diagnosed. We were we were writing Voices at the time. We were in LA, and it was really fucking tough time, because we were trying to, Josh and I were trying to process one of our closest friends dying at age 31 of cancer, that we were a part of, you know, the end there. And during the whole process, I think it was important for us to be there for him, as much as we could, obviously. But writing Voices, I'm trying to think of all the names of the songs, like My Only Friend, Blackout Days, Nothing But Trouble, all songs just about loneliness and just darkness and sadness, and you know, the beauty of, oh, and Fall in Love, with the name of Fall in Love is obviously lovely. But the lyrics are, you know, just all about hurting somebody, hurting people. And, all of the songs, there's not one song on there that's happy, but, that was the way I released. And then we go on tour. It's never stopped. It's nonstop at this point. I think Josh and I are, you know, kind of losing it a little bit, but not knowing how to say stop, because kind of seeing, you know, some your close friends passing away, and you're just like, whatever, we got to do it for them, or whatever, you know, was going on in our heads. So we never took care of ourselves. We never ever took care of ourselves. We just allowed our space to, I think, just self-medicate, keep going. We got to go do these shows. We got to keep pushing. We gotta be that band that we've always wanted to be, that we promised ourselves since day one. And that's what we did. And so that tour cycle ended, and that's where we started three. After I think a year or two on the road, like nonstop, just but having, you know, like that was kind of our breaking album of sorts. I don't really think you can say that, but and we started three, and my sister moved out to LA. I talked her into moving out to LA, and she was pretty insecure and really just afraid of leaving the house. She was still living with my mom at the time. Just kind of struggled with everything. And I somehow managed to tell her to get the hell out and come out to LA. Like, just, I don't know, let's start a new life. You're going to love the sunshine. I'm going to help you. My boyfriend at the time was like, hey, I found a job for you. We found a roommate for you, and she's awesome. And we have, Josh is out here. We all grew up together, Josh and my sister. And there's just good people out here. Don't be afraid. Come on out. Since she came out, and she was loving life for a minute. After maybe, I think she was out here for about a year and a half. She was doing pretty well, or at least she was hiding it pretty well. Cause she was, I think she also kind of learned in a way to kind of keep her problems hidden, because her problems fucked up a lot of things when she was younger and when we were kids. So she would always just like hide in her room kind of thing and drink, and just be, she sometimes wouldn't come out of her room for days. And, I remember when I could finally kind of tell from her being like, just being herself. I could always just kind of tell when she was in a really bad place. And I remember asking, our friend, her roommate, like, hey, I can tell Beck, my sister's not doing really well. I just want you to know that, like, it's kind of it happens. Cause that's kind of all I really knew, how to explain it. And not that she would, you know, lash out or anything, but I just knew Becky would go into, you know, a dark place. And I asked her roommate, I was like, hey, are you all right? Is there, like, how's it going at home? And she explained, you know, I don't know. I don't really know. There's nothing that I can do to help. And just kind of explaining to her, like, well, it's usually a phase, and like, it's, you know, she kind of goes through this, but I know she's just kind of, I know she's not happy with her work right now. You know, don't put too much stress on yourself and whatnot. That was kind of the last conversation about it. We were writing we were maybe like a quarter into writing the album, just mostly ideas. And I got a phone call that she killed herself. You know, after a certain amount of time. I mean, at that point, it's just like, holy shit. Like, what? Okay. I gotta go call my mom now, and tell her that her daughter killed herself. And I remember having to do that, and just feeling like I never wanted to have to do this. I always thought that she would figure it out, you know, because she, again, struggled her whole life with anxiety and depression. And, you know, kind of just our childhoods and the way life happened to her and happened to us. She just, I don't know, like, it's hard because I haven't been able to I understand it's not my fault. Finally, you know, that took a really long time. But that still doesn't mean that I'm never going to fucking see her again, you know? Which is why I tell her how much I fucking hate her. She's such an asshole for leaving. So that all kind of happened. What a fucking whirlwind of a couple of months in general. Going through it all, funeral and everything, and coming back to LA and knowing that we had this album. Obviously everyone was fine. Like, we can just fucking wait. Like, there's no, and there was a little bit of just like, well, what do you do? Should you like go off and fucking live in Patagonia for 2 years and just find yourself? Which I thought maybe that's what I wanted to do. Which is, you know, I think one of my normal patterns is run away from problems. Or stay and go into the studio and fucking be as raw and open and honest as you possibly can, with just not holding back and knowing beforehand what you want to say. Because normally, you know, again, like, all of our songs are really dark, but I didn't know where that was coming from. I had no fucking idea, because I thought I was the superhero, this person who's going to say everything's okay and everything's fine and you're going to be great and I'm great because I'm helping you feel great. And, you know, whatever kind of mentality I had for my entire life. It was this kind of just moment is either like sink or swim. And I decided that we should go back into the studio and write this album, that, it surrounded my sister's, death, but also I think was kind of the straw that broke the camel's back of finally having so many things build up, so much darkness and so much weight and so much pain, and not putting on like a, hey, how are you? I'm okay. And keeping it inside and releasing it somewhere else. Just fucking throwing it up, scream puking it up. And that's what we did. And it was incredible. It was really painful to do, but the most cathartic kind of experience I think that we have ever had. Because Josh and I, again, we all grew up together. I met Josh through my sister, actually, as kids, and Josh and I were on this just, I don't know, this weird wavelength above everything else or below anyone else, that like we just released and wrote this incredible album that I'm so proud of. And I think maybe so proud of because it had intention in a way. Like there was this moment where I didn't need to hide. I didn't want to hide. And we finished it and it was awesome. And I thought that kind of that time was like, oh, fuck. All right, Jesus, I got through it. I got through whatever I needed to get through to fix this, you know, whatever. And then we go on tour and I have to sing these songs every single fucking night and relive. I guess my truth and just the experience of everything all over again, every single fucking night. I was exhausted at the end of every show. I could barely fucking get off the stage, and I had to lay down, and I was always kind of hyperventilating. I was very unwell. I wasn't taking care of myself because I had to, I was self-medicating to get through the tour, and getting just to get through the every single night, because it was so painful to relive it. And it just took its toll. It took its toll until the end of the tour. I was in my darkest place, with just numbing myself, and I mean, I'm sure you can see it if you look back on maybe performances, of just crying during scream crying in just one song called Destroyer, which is about my sister, and it was exhausting. And then I finally admitted to myself that I needed to get help, and it wasn't because obviously this shit wasn't working. And it was kind of strange because I was seeing my patterns in my sister's patterns, and I was angry at myself that I got to that space. But it also made me understand, you know, how she could have felt. And I took the initiative and I found a therapist, and I have been going to her weekly ever since. And she finally, I learned about myself finally to where I can actually use my words and have this conversation with you instead of, you know, putting on the face of like, hey, I'm good. How are you? Yeah. Oh, my dad just died, but I'm fine. I realize how important it is to go back and discover things about your patterns in your past, in your childhood, that it does make you the person that you are today. And because my biggest fear, and I feel like one of the biggest reasons I was to put on this earth was to speak about the scary stuff and how shitty it was for my sister to have to leave, and that she couldn't stay, she couldn't handle it for whatever reason. And for families that have to go through it and have to feel this everlasting pain for the rest of their lives that they'll never, ever, ever get an answer for because that person is gone. And I know what that pain is. And I know that it's unfair. And I just want to speak. I just want to tell my story if it can help anyone in any single way, and to be able to actually use my words is very powerful. And I guess that's where I can stop talking. Jesus, that was like 8 hours of just pain and death. God,
it's such a powerful story, and I appreciate you telling it. It's you know, obviously it's very painful, but having to talk about these things, not only having to have gone through it and cope with it on a day-to-day basis, but then having to talk about it publicly is very hard.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, it is. It's kind of just a crazy, every time I tell the story, it still like makes me shake my head and be like, Jesus Christ, what the fuck is, like, what kind of cards have been dealt to me? I'm still here, and I'm doing what I can do.
You know, I think that, you know, just there's so much that you said there, but a couple of things that really struck me was when we're talking about physical or mental health issues, and I think there's something about it that's so destabilizing. And living with the idea that you know, that your life can be just upended like that, and how out of control and unstable that feels. But then, especially when it comes to mental health issues, coupling that with trying as best as we can, whether it's because we think that's what other people want or we're just struggling with it, to just not feel anything. And when you put those two things together, it's such a powerful recipe for us feeling lost, you know. And what you're describing with the music, when you think about why, you know, there's so many reasons why music is powerful, but just having a place that you can count on to feel, and not only to experience feelings, but to express feelings, and that you have control over it. You can keep going back to it, whether it's as a fan or as an artist. You start to get a sense of part of why the music is so powerful, because there's just not that many places where you can have that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of, it's the strange fear to feel. I think that people struggle with that, probably, I don't know, everybody. And again, you know, you always think that no one can understand what I'm going through, and that is not true at all, because we all have that, just the same, that same feeling that no one can understand. But you just have to be able to feel it and not be afraid of feeling, and take the next step of saying it out loud. But what makes me so, so proud and so lucky that I had music, because shit, I don't even know where I would be right now if I didn't, and to be able to give that to, our fans, to write songs that have feeling. I think that the most important songs in this world are the ones that make you feel something, but just have a feeling, to say, holy shit, what is that? What, oh my God, what is, like, it's addicting. It's like, it's the most beautiful feeling in the world to me. And I'm just so lucky that I can give that to people.
And, you know, there's this idea you know, sometimes when people will talk about, you know, what's favorite kind of music, what's the best kind of music. And, you know, this idea of anything that, that makes you feel is worthwhile. It does, and it doesn't even matter what it makes you feel, you know, like any kind of willingness to approach rather than avoid emotions, whether it's really, really sad and painful emotions, or even really, really kind of upbeat and positive emotions, you know, just finding somewhere where you feel like you can connect in emotionally is such a powerful, in some cases, starting an endpoint for a lot of people, you know, just to know that they can feel anything. You know, you were talking about feeling numb. And sometimes, you know, which makes sense, like the sense of, you know, even just listening to the story, it's almost like, God, you feel like you just, you almost feel like, God, I don't want to, you want to shut down because it's so powerful. And just the notion that somebody can feel anything in the midst of that, it, you know, assume, you know, unfortunately, some people will turn to drugs or alcohol, which is in theory unhealthy. But if you can find a healthy way of feeling something, yeah, that resonates with you, it's just, it's so important during those times.
Yeah. Yeah. It's one of those things again, where I wish, it's strange. It's hard because all of these realizations and understandings of who I am and how I feel and what I've been and, you know, just everything, it's, I've had them after my sister died. And it's hard because, you know, I probably wouldn't have realized any of them if she didn't die, in a really weird, dark way of saying it. But it's true. I think it was my, it wasn't just this one thing that happened. That totally flipped over my life. It was just hitting the rock bottom. It was the fucking, the last straw. It was the, like the last thing that I could handle. And the most important, you know, my fucking sister, she's my everything. She was part of my life. She was my only sister. And the person that I was always looked up to. She was my hero. And especially since my father was gone, and I, you know, for her to leave and for her to leave, and not say it, not come to me and not feeling guilty about feeling the way she did and not coming out and saying, hey, I fucking need to just talk to you. I mean, anything, any kind of thing. I was so just completely not aware at all until it was too gone. And I know she'd wanted to hide things from me because she knew how much shit I had gone through, with you know, my friends, Benjamin and Kirk dying, the abusive kind of relationships that I was in, you know, having to deal with, alcoholism, and just addiction with some of my friends, and how much it just destroyed me. And I know she didn't want to come to me because it was just one more thing that I had to deal with. And I hated knowing that I knew that's what she felt.
Yeah, I think that's unfortunately such a powerful feeling that people have when they're struggling, is they don't want to be a burden on, you know, they already feel like a burden to the people around them, especially those who are closest to them. And, you know, people might be sitting around them being like, oh, if you had, you know, just reached out to me, like kind of thinking, it's like, why didn't you reach out to me? And it's so hard because when you're in that hole, when you're in that, you know, the darkest of dark places, it sort of makes sense somehow that you don't want to hurt people by reaching out. And yet at that same time, it doesn't make sense that the loss of you would be something that would hurt even more.
Yeah.
You know, that's how low, you know, we feel about ourselves. We're in that moment, you know, that like a conversation. It's like, oh, I would never want to burden with them. But the idea of not having us that doesn't make sense as a burden, because we couldn't imagine that we have any worth. And that's so tough, you know, to convince people otherwise when they're in that zone.
Yeah, it is just the most painful thing about it is just knowing how sad she was. She must have been, you know, for someone to really take that step to actually physically take the motions and do it, to end your life and leave forever is, I can't even imagine how she must have felt, how sad she must have felt. And I think that's hard for just for the survivors of suicide is knowing that your close person in your life is feeling that sad, to actually go for it, go do it. And it's just something that I think I always knew about her. I always saw this in her, from all of the hundreds of, you know, panic attacks and just like breakdowns that I would witness her having, and, you know, all of the just stress that she would put on my mom, you know, not doing it on purpose, but she did it, because she needed to get it out. But to hear someone cry so painfully, just the feeling of just hearing a fully depressed, the lowest of the lowest crying was always something that I could feel when I heard it, when I heard her having a breakdown. I didn't know how to talk. I didn't know how to help her. I didn't, all I knew how to do was kind of stay quiet and be normal and not have any issues and not start any shit. I was like the best teenager you could possibly ask for my mom. Because I knew my mom was going through so much stress and pain, having to be a single mom. And also then having to, before that, having to be the mom to pick up all the pieces and understand that your husband had a 12-year-old tumor the size of a grapefruit. That was the reason why he turned into a complete asshole. My mom is a goddamn superhero in that way. And so I just wanted to be quiet. I just wanted to be quiet. And that's how I learned developed, be quiet, help others, you know, gravitate towards people who need help, because you don't help yourself, because you didn't even know that I needed help. I had no idea. I was like, oh, well, who else needs help? Let's just dive right into their lives and not even discuss or understand yourself. It's crazy how much I've learned. It's mind boggling to me.
Yeah. And Sarah, I thank you so much for sharing the story. It was very powerful stuff. And I've seen some of your work beforehand. You've been a strong mental health advocate for a long time, and it's very much appreciated.
Thank you for your time. I appreciate your podcast. Thank you for having this for everybody. And it's incredible. So thanks.
Oh, absolutely.
So there it is. Sarah Barthel of Fantagram talking about how she has dealt with devastating and traumatic loss in her life. There is so much to take away from the conversation with Sarah, but one of the most important concepts I want to highlight is that loss is an ongoing process in our lives. The experience of loss with her dad, as she saw his personality change, was occurring even before he passed away. And loss reverberates in our life. As we have new experiences, achieve new goals, and face new challenges, these experiences get reinterpreted and processed in the context of our relationship to the person we lost. We think about how we might have shared those experiences, what they might have said or done. Or maybe we just miss that person because something reminds us of them. And we may often re-experience a sense of grief and loss in those moments. And it's important that we understand that loss and grief are processes that we encounter throughout our life as we change and grow. This isn't to make people hopeless about feeling trapped in grief, but rather to encourage people to recognize the enduring power that loss and grief have in our lives. And it is important that we not take the approach that we should just get over it because it happened a long time ago. In order to heal and grow after loss, we must recognize that this process is an ongoing and important part of our lives that is crucial to our mental health and well-being. I want to thank Consequence Podcast Network and Sound Mind Live for including me in this wonderful project. And thanks to Pete Wilson and the Rooks for letting us use their song, I Know. If you are struggling with anxiety, depression, or addiction and are looking for help, please call the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration National Helpline at 1-800-622-4357. If you're thinking about harming yourself and want to seek help, please contact the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 1-800-273-8255. You may also go to Sound Mind Live or the Consequence websites for more information. So be healthy, be safe, and be kind to yourself and others. See you next time at the Crossroads.
Jorge Army and fellow music fans, I'm Kayla.
And I'm Bethany, and we're the hosts of Standing BTS from the Consequence Podcast Network. We're a bi-weekly show that covers the impact and legacy of K-pop group BTS.
We mix the perfect blend of research and fangirl as we take a deep dive into lyrics during album reviews, theorize over music videos, and keep up with their current events.
No BTS topic is off limits. We welcome everyone into the conversation, whether you're a casual fan, committed ARMY, or someone who's just curious about one of the biggest music groups in the world.
Come chat with us every other Thursday with a new episode wherever podcasts are found.
Hey, I'm Nancy Wilson.
Mike Campbell.
Mark Mothersbaugh from Devo.
Hey, it's Adam from Counting Crows, and I am here giving you the story behind the song.
The story behind the song is back for season 4. I'm Peter Chidi of Deep Cuts Media, and this season we're diving even deeper into some of music history's most iconic tracks with the legends who made them.
What's so beautiful about it is a lot of people connect with, you gotta live your life and don't let the big man push you down. Don't have to live like a refugee, can't keep fighting for what you believe. And that was Tom.
From the spark of inspiration to untold tales from the studio, we unlock the true stories that shape the music you love.
At the time on the radio, there was a really cool riff by Nazareth covering a Joni Mitchell song, This Flight Tonight. It had the same groove, but I think Barracuda kind of blew it out of the water.
Join us as we all sit down with music icons like Devo, Heart, Mike Campbell of Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, Sublime, Counting Crows, and so many more. New episodes are out now from the Consequence Podcast Network, so tune in wherever you get your podcasts and join me for the story behind the song.